Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that understands that some of you are suffering in the polar vortex, but doesn't quite believe that negative 50 is an actual real temperature. I apologize. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So the Fifth Circuit has teed up a really big test for Chief Justice John Roberts, and the case is out of Louisiana. It involves hospital admitting privileges requirements for abortion providers. Now, this law really ought to be dead in the water. I mean, it really, really should be just like slain, murdered in the water. But of course it's not.
Nope.
And so in this episode, we're going to tell you all about this case and why it's the abortion rights fight that you should be watching right now.
Okay, Imani, so I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
How is it that it is 2019 and we are still here talking about legal challenges to hospital admitting privileges beyond, say, go away, you are unconstitutional?
I wish I knew, Jess. We've been writing about this stuff for, what, 5 or 6 years now? And these laws are wildly unconstitutional. Not only are they wildly unconstitutional, they are absolutely senseless.
I mean, so senseless. And, you know, it's one of those things I think you and I take for granted because we've been covering this for so long, just how unconstitutional and senseless they are. But we should probably give a breakdown for listeners, don't you think?
I absolutely agree. So here's the deal, y'all. Abortion is extremely safe. We're talking so safe that the risk of death associated with childbirth is about 14 times higher than the risk associated with death from abortion. In addition, less than 0.3% of women experiencing a complication from an abortion actually require hospitalization. Now, let me put that in some context for you.
Yeah.
You are more likely to die from being struck by lightning than you are from a complication with abortion. You are more likely to die from having a bad colonoscopy than you are from having a complication with abortion. You are also more likely to die from texting while driving than you are from having a complication from abortion. That is to say, abortion is extremely, wildly, categorically safe.
So safe. But yet.
Just like.
But yet.
It's so safe, comma, but. States insist on enacting these admitting privileges laws. These are laws which require doctors to have admitting privileges at hospitals within 30 miles or so from the location of where the abortion is provided. Now, these laws make zero sense. They harken back to this sort of like country time style of medicine where like you lived in some rural area and you had one doctor and the doctor was your general practitioner and they'd come to your house with their little brown or little black bag and they'd treat you. And if you had some sort of complication, then you could rest assured that that very same doctor would be at the hospital to carry on your care. But that's just not how it works these days, is it?
No, it's not how it works at all. I mean, I remember growing up and listening to stories that my grandmother would tell me growing up on the farm out in Valentine, Nebraska, which was like out in the middle of nowhere. And they literally had one of those doctors that like rode around and, hey, if you're really sick, like we will trade you a calf, right, for some care. And so like that's the kind of situation that these bills invoke and not what we have in our modern medical system where hospitals, for example, don't turn away patients who are in medical emergencies, right? They absolutely can't do that. We'll put a little asterisk there for Catholic hospitals because that's a whole different episode. But generally speaking, if you are somebody who is experiencing some kind of complication and you present yourself to an emergency room, they're not going to say, you know what? Your doctor wasn't the, you know, doesn't have privileges here. So sorry, we can't see you. Like that just doesn't work. And so, you know, there's just that part of it, which is A, how medicine works.
Right, exactly. And also, there's the part of it that's specific to abortion care. So, for example, with surgical abortions, if something goes wrong and you have some horrible complication, the practical reality is that a patient is going to be transported to whatever hospital is closest to wherever they're having the complication, right? They're not going to transfer you, you know, an hour outside of where you live so you can make sure you see the specific doctor who provided you an abortion. And that's a real possibility, right? Because the number of abortion providers in various states is winnowed down so much that there people literally have to travel for hours in order to get abortion care. And what's even more is that these laws are even more ridiculous in the context of medical abortion, right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Can you explain why it's so ridiculous to force doctors to have admitting privileges in the context of medical abortion?
Right. So, I mean, just like you said, you know, in the context of surgical abortion where EMTs will be making that decision or, you know, layer in insurance factors too. Insurance companies and coverage may dictate places where you go and do not go that are completely out of the context of your control. If you have a medical abortion and you experience a complication at home, let's say, you know, you experience bleeding that for you feels heavy and you are concerned and you call 911, they're going to transport you to the place where that is nearest to you. Not, again, checking your records prior to admission to say, who is your doctor? Where was this happened? And then make a transfer or admitting decision there. So, like, you know, we've spent a couple minutes going through this, but it's important because we have lawmakers passing all sorts of abortion restrictions that exist free and divorced from reality. And in this case, it's free from and divorced from the reality of how medical practice happens, you know? And it's just, and so that brings us to where we are now at the Supreme Court and this case out of Louisiana. So let's talk about that.
Right. So the case is called June Medical Services v. Gee. And plaintiffs in that case are some providers who are challenging Act 620 in Louisiana. And Act 620 is an admitting privileges law, which requires doctors performing or inducing an abortion to have active admitting privileges at a hospital that is located within 30 miles from where the abortion is performed.
Now, hold on. I want to jump in here for a second because I have what might be kind of a basic question here. Yeah. But that sounds like identical maybe to the Texas law that the Supreme Court declared unconstitutional a couple years ago in Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstadt. I mean, I realize, you know, every day is like a decade now in the Trump administration, but 2016 wasn't that long ago. And am I wrong? Like, that decision said that a law that required abortion providers have acting admitting privileges at a hospital located within 30 miles from where the abortion was performed in Texas was unconstitutional. Am I wrong?
You are absolutely not wrong, Jessica. The law is literally identical to the Texas law. In fact, Act 620 in Louisiana was modeled on the admitting privileges provision in HB 2, which was the omnibus legislation in Texas that essentially abortion rights activists and lawyers fought over for several years, which culminated in this landmark decision, Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt.
Okay, so then what the hell are we doing?
Isn't that always the question? What the hell are we doing? What we're doing is dealing with a state that modeled its law on Texas's law, that actually modeled its law specifically because they saw that the Texas law was shuttering abortion clinics. And they thought, gee whiz, we want to shutter abortion clinics in Louisiana. Why don't we pass a similar law? And hopefully, you know, there'll be so few abortion providers that essentially abortion will be regulated out of existence. It's exactly the same law. It is exactly the same case.
So our fellow law nerds should know this idea of precedent, right? This idea that we have a decision like Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt that says these kinds of laws are unconstitutional. So how is it that we have a case that the Supreme Court has, you know, swirling around it that's basically the same goddamn thing, Imani? What is going on here?
The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is out of its goddamn mind.
The Fifth Circuit.
Like, that's the only thing I could think of. The Fifth Circuit has gone completely rogue. And let me explain why. Normally what happens when you have a lawsuit of this nature, you have a district court. It's a district court, also known as a lower court, also known as a trial court. And that is the court that does fact-finding. They do the fact-finding, they issue findings of fact, then they issue conclusions of law, and then they make a decision. In this case, the district court held, I believe it was a 6-day trial, heard from umpteen witnesses, thousands of pages of documents, hundreds of hours of testimony, and decided essentially this law is unconstitutional, this law has no practical medical benefit, this law will force will force abortion providers out of existence, so much so that there will only be one provider left in the state and no providers left in the state that can perform abortions after 17 weeks.
Yikes.
The district court said that's just not constitutional. That's an undue burden under Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which is the seminal case that said laws which present a substantial obstacle to a pregnant person getting an abortion is an undue burden, and those types of laws are unconstitutional. The Fifth Circuit said, to hell with all that. We don't care about all of that. And so a three-judge panel, this is three judges out of the, whatever, dozens of judges that are actually on the Fifth Circuit, two judges out of that three-judge panel essentially said, screw you, Supreme Court. Screw you, precedent. We are going to ignore the lower court's findings. We're going to substitute our own judgment for the judgment of the lower court. And we're going to say that, you know what? This law is just hunky-dory.
I mean,
I mean, it's literally the
I gotta pull myself together here for a little. I mean, so first of all, there's the Fifth Circuit, and we're used to the Fifth Circuit, you know, issuing bananas opinions. This is just something that they do. They've sort of been the outlier for a while here. But a couple things. First, let's talk about the district court opinion just for a minute. You mentioned all of the fact findings. That opinion blocking the Louisiana law is over 100 goddamn pages long.
It is 116 pages long. I mean, it goes through the facts in painstaking detail and then draws conclusions of laws based on those facts. It is the fact that the Fifth Circuit just decided to ignore all of the lower court findings and decide, you know what? This law is constitutional. This law is not actually going to close any clinics. And to the extent that doctors weren't able to get admitting privileges because, for example, some of the hospitals are Catholic hospitals and they simply refused to hand out admitting privileges to any abortion providers. Or remember how I said up front that abortion is so extremely safe that you're more likely to die from a bad colonoscopy than abortion? Well, a lot of these hospitals, because they are for-profit businesses, they require doctors who have admitting privileges to admit a certain number of patients per year. And because abortion is so safe, abortion providers can't meet that threshold. Like, if you're required to admit 25 patients a year, abortion providers aren't going to admit that many patients to a hospital because abortion is just that safe. So it's this sort of Kafka-esque, you know, circle of fuckery where you gotta have it. Yeah, the fix is in from the get-go. And the Fifth Circuit was just like, decided to ignore all of that. And then in the cases where doctors tried and couldn't get admitting privileges, the district court laid out in grave detail all of the things that these doctors did in order to get admitting privileges and ultimately decided that they were not able to despite their good faith efforts. Fifth Circuit was like, nah, if they just tried harder, they would have been able to get admitting privileges somewhere. I mean, gee whiz, these doctors are just at fault. They are not willing to go that extra mile to try and get admitting privileges. That's not what the district court said, and it is not within the purview of the Fifth Circuit to substitute its own judgment on findings of fact the way that it did.
Let's give the listeners a little more context for just how off the wall this Fifth Circuit decision was overturning the lower court. We had Judge Patrick Higginbotham, and I want to talk about him not just because that is a fantastic appellate court name.
Mr. Higginbotham, I presume.
Judge Higginbotham. But we have a Reagan appointee. This guy has been around and on the bench and in conservative judicial circles for a long time. Mm-hmm. He dissented.
Yep.
He dissented and he said, y'all are bananas. What you are doing is purely political. You are ignoring precedent. You're not just ignoring whole women's health. You're ignoring all of abortion rights jurisprudence right now because you have a political axe to grind. I mean, hot damn.
Hot damn indeed. And in addition, he pointed out, and so did Judge Dennis, who actually wrote a pretty scathing dissent from the Fifth Circuit's decision not to rehear the case, right? So as soon as the three judge panel said, this law is unconstitutional, plaintiffs were like, what the fuck? We want a rehearing. And so they filed papers with the Fifth Circuit and was like, excuse me, we're going to need the entire court to rehear this case because these two judges really just fucked it all up. And the entire Fifth Circuit, there were like a majority of the judges who actually wanted to hear the case, but there were also a huge contingent of judges who are conservative and just don't seem to give a shit about Supreme Court precedent that were like, it's fine. Nah. It's no big deal. So Judge Dennis actually said in his dissent that I'm going to read you this quote. The important constitutional issues involved in this case deserve consideration by the full court, more so than most others for which the court has granted en banc hearing. And en banc means, for you law nerds, I'm sure you already know this, but in case you have forgotten or don't, en banc means in front of the whole court. So you go to the Fifth Circuit, you get a 3-judge panel, they make a decision, you're allowed to ask for a rehearing en banc in front of the whole court. And the whole court said, nah, we don't want to hear it. The law's constitutional. And Dennis and one other dude, Higginson, were like, the fuck? No, it's not. And specifically, he brought up, as did Judge Higginbotham, the egregious error that the Fifth Circuit committed when it substituted its own judgment, because that is not what the appellate court is supposed to do. An appellate court is supposed to take the record as it comes. It is supposed to look at the lower court findings and accept them unless they are in clear error. That's a legal term, clear error. Mm-hmm. And clear error is a very, very high bar to meet, which means essentially appellate courts are almost never supposed to look at facts and come out a different way than the lower court does, because it's the lower court who holds the trial, who's there to analyze the credibility of the witnesses, who is there and reads every bit of piece of paper. That is the person that we want making these calls. We don't want the appellate court who's just supposed to double check and make sure that the lower court got the law right. We don't want these appellate courts essentially retrying the cases, but that's essentially what the Fifth Circuit did here.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what the Fifth Circuit did. And as a result, now we have an emergency petition filed by the folks challenging the law, asking the Supreme Court to step in and stay this Fifth Circuit decision, which if it doesn't, the law will take effect on Monday. And like you said earlier, Louisiana will be left with one abortion provider. So what will or won't the court do? And what is that all going to mean? Well, we'll get to that after the break.
So the court should issue the stay and essentially tell the Fifth Circuit to get a grip. I mean, that's what they really did. That's what they did in other admitting privileges cases post Whole Woman's Health, for example, in Wisconsin and in Mississippi. In Mississippi, the lower court initially blocked the law. The Fifth Circuit upheld the lower court ruling. And then the same day that the Supreme Court issued its Whole Woman's Health decision, it refused to hear Mississippi's appeal, which left that injunction in place. And then in 2017, after rehearing the case and holding a trial, the district court permanently blocked the law. And essentially, Mississippi just gave up. I mean, they admitted, they said, quote, they can't identify any meaningful distinction between the Texas admitting privileges law struck down in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt and the admitting privilege requirement of the Mississippi law.
I'm going out on a limb because there is none.
Exactly. There is none. And they likely didn't want to waste taxpayer money defending a law that was indefensible. And the same thing happened in Wisconsin. And back in 2014, Wisconsin asked the Supreme Court to step in and review a Seventh Circuit ruling blocking Wisconsin's admitted Back in 2014, Wisconsin asked the Supreme Court to step in and review the Seventh Circuit ruling blocking the admitting privileges law in Wisconsin. And a day after the Supreme Court issued its Whole Woman's Health decision, the Supreme Court refused to hear that case. In both of those cases in Wisconsin and in Mississippi, the admitting privileges laws would have decimated clinic access. And that's exactly what the Louisiana law is going to do. And the Supreme Court should step in and block it to make sure that pregnant people in Louisiana have access to abortion and can go to more than the one provider who cannot possibly serve all of the abortion needs in the state.
And that was really the lay of the land from Whole Woman's Health and immediately afterwards. Up until recently, last May, the Supreme Court had another admitting privileges case before it, this time a case out of Arkansas called Planned Parenthood versus Jegley. And this is why the Louisiana case is so important to watch. It's a test of the strength of Whole Woman's Health, because in this Arkansas case, in Planned Parenthood versus Jegley, the Supreme Court didn't block Arkansas. Now, that law was a little different than Texas, and there the Eighth Circuit said basically that the Whole Woman's Health case didn't apply specifically because Whole Woman's Health had factual findings that applied to Texas, and what Arkansas needed to do was create those same factual findings for Arkansas. But that signaled that the Supreme Court was now willing to take another look so quickly at Whole Woman's Health. And it's got this case out of Louisiana sitting there that is identical to it. And so this is really that true test of the strength of this precedent.
Right. But And even, you're right, but the Louisiana law is different than what happened in Arkansas, right? In Arkansas, they hadn't developed this factual record about how this law would harm pregnant people, would reduce access. But in Louisiana, they have an entire record, and that record is almost exactly the same as the record in Texas. But you're right, it is a very fact-specific inquiry, and some states may be able to sidestep whole woman's health if they can show that the law was actually passed in order to advance pregnant people's health and safety and not to reduce clinic access. But here we don't have that. Here we have a law that was specifically based on Texas's law. The sponsor of the law, a woman by the name of Katrina Jackson, actually said that the law, Act 620, would, quote, build on our past work to protect life in our state and would protect unborn children. And in fact, there is an anti-abortion group that sent Representative Jackson an email that was praising this bill because of its similarity to the Texas law. And in that email, this anti-abortion group said that Texas's law, quote, had tremendous success in closing abortion clinics and restricting abortion access in Texas. So again, we go back to whole woman's health, where Texas went into court and started yapping about how this law was intended to protect, women's health and safety, but it really wasn't, because they were out there blabbering in the media and on press releases about how this law was so awesome that it was going to close all these clinics. So how can you on the one hand be saying, this is great, it's going to close clinics, but then go into court and be like, no, really, it's all about women's health and safety. We promise, we swear. So Jessica, you're our resident court whisperer, right? So what do you think the Supreme Court is going to do here?
Well, you know, Imani, I mean, quite clearly the court should grant the stay. And everything that we've talked about so far has been about the law and and precedent. And the reality is we are now existing in that space between law and politics. And I want to turn for a moment to a quote from Chief Justice John Roberts during his confirmation hearings, where he said, judges have to have the humility to recognize that they operate within a system of precedent shaped by other judges equally striving to live up to the judicial oath.
That's quite a quote. You know,
I mean,
demonstrates that he understands the principle of precedent, also known as stare decisis. It demonstrates that, you know, he seems to be concerned about the legacy of the court, so that every time there's court turnover, we're not just going back and undoing precedent and it just turns the entire court into a chaotic political morass. I mean, conservative judges are always claiming precedent as a principle, but then sometimes they don't because it doesn't suit them. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, this is very true. And I think particularly as Chief Justice, this has to be weighing heavy on John Roberts' mind. And if he is at all sincere in this stated belief that fidelity to precedent is important, that it is a foundational principle of his, then he will vote to grant the stay, because under whole woman's health, there is just simply no reason to let this law take effect. It is quite clearly 100% like open and shut. We should not be doing this episode.
Exactly. We should be drinking whiskey right now instead of talking about why this ridiculous law is even at issue.
Absolutely. And so, you know, earlier we had brought up Arkansas, and Arkansas is different enough in terms of the law that while I don't agree with the court's decision to let that take effect while the legal challenge in the lower courts proceeds, I can see from a very narrow ruling of precedent where they are coming from. I don't agree with it, but like my lawyer brain can deal with it, right?
Because in that case, the plaintiffs hadn't really developed that record, you know, that important record about how it was the law was going to negatively affect abortion access, negatively affect pregnant people. But in the Louisiana case, in June Medical Services versus Gee, this Louisiana case, plaintiffs did that. They had a full record, and it showed that the law was, I mean, we keep saying this, but it literally is identical. It's so identical that the Fifth Circuit, the two-judge majority of that three-judge panel, they admitted that the law was identical. And then they turned around and said, fuck it.
Right. So so we know in Holman's Health that John Roberts voted to let the Texas law take effect, but he was in the minority. He lost. Right. And so he should be able to put his big boy robes on and accept that loss. And
big boy robes.
and do the right thing here. If he votes with the other conservatives and lets the law take effect, that is a de facto overruling, in my opinion, of whole women's health.
Absolutely.
And that is a radical move for him to take and still claim the spot or want to claim the spot as some sort of swing vote or some sort of umpire who is only there to call balls and strikes. So all of that is completely out the window, right? So,
and also, I think it's important to note that Roberts is not averse to ignoring precedent, right? I mean, we had the Janus case last year where they ignored 40 years worth of precedent. The Janus case was about the union case, and we had an episode about it. You should go back and listen to it. But Roberts was just like, precedent?
Who
cares? You know? And so it's like, you know, to talk about Citizens United, we can talk about Shelby County, we can talk about Hobby Lobby. There's just tons of decisions where John Roberts has shown that he doesn't give a shit about precedent if that precedent blocks conservative policy gains. Mm-hmm. So what do you think is going to happen, given that Roberts says out of one side of his mouth, I'm so concerned about the legacy, about my legacy and the legacy of the court, and we should adhere to precedent. And on the other side, he's basically throwing up middle fingers to precedent.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of cynical pragmatist in me really thinks that they will rule 5-4 to deny the stay and let these laws take effect while the challenges proceed, so that there are these ad hoc state by state. Well, you know we have as a matter of findings of fact that admitting privileges laws do not advance patient safety, but we need to do that inquiry in Missouri. We need to do that inquiry in Kentucky. We need to do that inquiry in Tennessee. In those places, you know, we will start to see that. And you know, that hurts. I know it really does. I know that John Roberts is anti-abortion. I know that he has been, you know, anti-abortion as a lawyer and as a judge and as a sitting member of the court his entire life. He's never cast a pro-choice vote. I don't, you know, like to suggest that he would cast a pro-choice vote in this moment is a stretch, but it really is putting in the crosshairs his legacy as a strictly anti-abortion justice and his beliefs under oath, even that precedent and fidelity to precedent and the, you know, continuation of the rule of law matters. And so that's sort of where we're at right now.
Right.
So, God, I'm fun at parties. So, get me a whiskey.
No, these were such buzzkills. But it's just, that's just the way, that's where we are right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we've got this conservative court right now, and shit's just up for grabs.
So what the attorneys have done is they've, you know, asked the Supreme Court to pause the Fifth Circuit decision while they appeal it to the Roberts Court. So effectively, this is a fight that is getting teed up one way or another. So the question really is, on this initial request for a stay, what is Roberts going to do? Because if he votes against the stay, then that is a very quiet vote to overturn Whole Woman's Health indirectly. If they grant the stay, and that's pretty much conceding that they'll take the case, in which case then where's Roberts going to vote? I mean, at that point, I think it's likely that he will vote to support the Louisiana law, because that's a direct way for him to overturn precedent as opposed to a backhanded way in denying the stay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. And also, I think it's important to note that if the court does not grant the stay, then that means all of these other states are going to start enacting admitting privileges laws, or the states that have already had theirs struck down will reenact admitting privileges laws. And especially in conservative circuits, they'll be able to do so with the knowledge that the law will take effect while the case winds its way through the courts. And so that's a 3-5 year period that these laws will be in effect, that abortion access will be decimated while litigation is ongoing. And that's just simply not the way that it's supposed to be. It doesn't make sense for these blatantly unconstitutional laws to remain in effect when we know they're constitutional, but we're still just essentially waiting to decide how much this new conservative court is going to screw us over.
Yeah, you know, so we'll be in that patchwork reality while we're waiting for that ultimate decision on the constitutionality of these laws and, you know, the challenge to Roe. So that's sort of what is getting teed up for and why we were so concerned with Kennedy's retirement and the Kavanaugh nomination.
I'm still so angry at Anthony Kennedy, you have no idea. Because even though Anthony Kennedy wrote all of that nonsense in Gonzales v. Carhart, mm-hmm. where he accepted all of the crap about abortion being traumatizing to women and, you know, a bad choice, and he really, really does not like abortion, but I think that he had enough respect for precedent that he would not have voted to allow this law to go forward. I mean, we're talking one provider for the entire state of Louisiana. That's bananas.
He voted with the majority in Holman South to strike Texas's law. I think for 2019, I'm going to make a t-shirt that says, "Hey, Tony, I'm still pissed," because I am. We will know by Friday, probably, what the court is going to do here in this case.
It's so stressful. It really shouldn't be this stressful. Like we said in the beginning, it is an open and shut case, but because of where we are, it's not. Mm-hmm. So we'll be back to explain to you what the court decides, what impact that decision will have. We're hoping that the court will issue a stay, but, you know, our court whisperer, resident court whisperer, Jess, is not optimistic. And so I guess we'll have to leave you on this sort of buzzkill note.
So we'll be back on Monday with a reaction to whatever the court does in this case to explain just what the hell happened and what it all means. So thanks for listening, and we will see you on the tubes.
But wait. Oh. If you want to continue talking to us about this, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Angry Black Lady. You can follow Jess on Twitter. She's at Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. You can follow Rewire.news at Rewire_news. And you can join our Facebook group, and people, please answer the question. I'm thinking about declining everyone who hasn't answered the question so you guys can come back, ask again, and answer the question. Thanks, and we'll see you on the tubes.
I got so distraught about this case, I just peaced out. See you on the tubes. Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer, and the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.